This podcast may contain explicit language or disturbingly descriptive imagery. Listen at your own discretion.
You must be either mad or insane to seek out this godforsaken place. But since you're here, I guess I can show you the Nest of Horrors.
The Nest of Horrors presents part 1 of The Body Farm, written by Brian Martinez and narrated by Erusian Rob, Robin Regalado, Liam Huell, and JD Jones.
I'm not a guy who gets scared easily, but I'm also not the kind who keeps his head in the sand, if you know what I mean. When something doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel right, period. I acknowledge that most of the bad things that happen in life can be blamed on people or the world around us, but I also believe there are things that fall outside those two categories, at least until we can prove otherwise. Like, what happened at the body farm? I've wanted to be a writer ever since I was a kid, so forgive me if I get too flowery sometimes. It's the habits of a writer. As I'm sure you know, though, writing doesn't pay the bills. And despite my dream of earning a living by writing, I've always needed a day job to get me by. Through the father of a friend, I ended up getting trained and certified as an unarmed security guard straight out of high school, which I did all the way through college. It was easy, and the money was good enough for a while, but eventually, I looked for something with a future in it. So long as my writing wasn't taking off, I figured I might as well build a career. After a long search, I got a job at one of those major banks. Which one, I'd rather not say. 6 years I spent working my arse off, climbing my way up the ranks. That was until 5 weeks ago, when they decided they had too many branches open on the East Coast, as well as too many employees working in those branches. So, I got the boot. No severance, no fanfare, no apology. I was out on the street, and as soon as I found out, no one was hiring. When things started to get desperate, I paid a visit to this employment agency up the block from my house. I've never liked the guy who runs it, but, as I said, times are desperate. So, I walked in and signed up. They didn't seem too hopeful when I asked about other bank jobs, but when they saw the security guard experience on my resume, they perked up. As it turned out, they had an overnight temp guard position they were having trouble filling. Needless to say, I was hesitant to take what I believed was a step backward. Not to down-talk or discredit guard work in any way, it just doesn't fit the direction I'm trying to go in at the moment. You'd think being an overnight guard would afford me plenty of time to write, but the truth is, I've always had a hard time writing while completely alone. For some reason, it makes me uneasy, and I end up getting nothing done. The point is, I didn't want to take the gig, but a man's gotta eat. My choice was helped by the rate they were paying, which was the higher end of what guards usually make. Against my better judgment, I accepted. They made a few phone calls, wrote down an address, and sent me on my way. "It's on the water," is the only detail they gave. My old uniform was a bit snug, but it still fit. I actually found that fact a little disappointing. Around 5 o'clock, I arrived at the address they'd written on the card, which, it turned out, was a boat launch to get over to an island, on which was the actual gig. I'll call it Twain Island, since I'm pretty sure I'm not supposed to be talking about it in the first place, even though its actual name is one I'd never heard, despite growing up close by. After a confusing exchange with the older guy who ran the dock, he told me something which very nearly made me turn around and get back in my car.
"I need to see your phone,"
he said. I was confused, but I took it out of my pocket and showed him. Then, he said,
"If that's a camera, I need to take it."
I made the joke, something like, "What's on that island? The Queen of England?" But he wasn't amused. I argued with him for a minute, but in the end I handed it over. Like I said, a man's got to eat. A few minutes later, an even older guy came and got me and took me out onto the boat. Since it was only the two of us, and since I had no idea what I had gotten myself into, I tried to make some small talk. The guy wasn't very talkative, but as we approached the island, he made the second sketchy comment of the day. This one in the form of a question.
Have you ever been to one of those farms?
I told him I'd been to plenty of farms, to which he said,
not like this one you haven't.
I had no idea what he was talking about. But by then, we were already pulling up to the dock that stuck out from the rocky shore. We docked. Before I could ask where I was supposed to go, he was already pulling away. It seemed like he didn't want to stick around long. There was a building up the ways a bit which looked like an old rec center. Given that I had nowhere else to go, I headed for the building. Halfway across the lawn was a sign which read, Twain Island Forensic Anthropology Facility. They were words I was familiar with separately, but together lost their meaning. As I contemplated exactly what they meant, a young guy wearing a guard's uniform came around the side of the building and waved me down.
I heard the boats,
he said. He introduced himself as Eric and handed me a walkie-talkie. He explained that, other than a few computers with an internet connection, all communication on the island was done by old-school means. In case of emergency, they even had a two-way radio setup. I asked him why I wasn't allowed to bring my cell, and he said it was so no pictures ended up on the internet, which I'd heard from a friend who did guard work at a high-end jewelry manufacturer, so it made some sense. It still didn't tell me what the hell was going on out on that island. I point-blank asked him. All he said was,
come on, now I'll show you.
We walked not into, but around the decent-sized building, past the second smaller building, and into the woods beyond. Eric said something about the island being the alleged site of buried pirate treasure, but to be honest, I wasn't paying much attention at that point. There was a strong smell in the air, pungent and sweet, and downright awful, which I found impossible to ignore. Eric noticed my face and said,
ever smell a dead body before?
I shook my head no. He said,
you'll never forget it now.
At that point, we came into a clearing in the woods where the foul odor really ramped up. I've always had a strong stomach, but even this was excessive. I felt a ball form at the back of my throat. There were two people, one male, one female, both roughly college-aged and wearing similar grey coats, standing over what looked like long, low cages made of chicken wire. As we walked closer, I could see dark forms in the cages like piles of trash. The girl looked over at us and nodded politely, but the guy didn't bother. She was pretty, and he looked like a bug. It wasn't until we were right on top of the cages that I realized what they held. The first body I saw, in fact have ever seen, was a woman's. Her skin was impossibly waxy, with large patches of discoloration, as if the wax had been burned. She looked like someone had sprinkled rice across her, like a new bride. Unfortunately, it wasn't rice. The maggots crawled on her legs and pooled in the crevices of her neck. Her surprisingly white teeth grinned up at me, exposed, and her belly was inflated like a birthday balloon. My mouth watered from the rising feel of vomit, but I managed to keep it in check. It helped not to look at her creeping skin. He introduced the two as Bernard and Terry, interns from the, name removed, Institute, and said that there were two more wandering around somewhere, as well as the man in charge, a scientist by the name of Dr. Christiansen. Terry could see that I was bothered, so she was nice enough to finally explain what was going on.
We study human decomposition,
she said. The goal was to better understand the process in order to help, among other things, police determine more accurate times of death in a variety of settings. I looked at the five or six other cages, which she explained were to keep birds away, and asked how many there were on the island.
It varies,
she said,
but usually it hovers somewhere around 50.
50 dead bodies. One island, no boats. They said some see you laters, and then Eric led me around the rest of the island. First to point out some of the other body sites. More corpses. Some caged, some not. And then, to perform a perimeter around the shore. He said I'd have to do at least 2 such rounds during my shift, which I was already thinking about skipping. It took about 45 minutes for us to circle back around to the dock, which I noticed was the only way onto or off of the island, short of risking the waves crashing onto the sharp rocks and the ring of slimy garbage. By then, the sun was starting to set. Then, he took me inside the main research building, which, as I'd guessed, had been converted from a sports center dating back some 50 years. We took a quick look around the operation, and I saw the back of someone's head inside one of the rooms, but other than that, not much registered. I think by that time, my head was spinning too fast for any more information to get in. We left the main building and went to the second building, which served as the guard's office. Eric pointed out the bathroom, the lockers, the eating area with stocked fridge, the flashlights, the desk with the two-way radio, which he showed me how to use, though by then he was eyeing his watch. He gave me a grin and asked if I was all set. I shrugged, which was the most sincere answer I could give.
I'll be honest,
he told me.
Most guys don't last long here, especially the night shifters.
Thanks.
If you take out the mental part, it's the easiest job in the world. But that mental part...
His voice trailed off, and I knew exactly what he meant. What could be easier than making sure a bunch of stiffs stayed dead? And yet, with the sun going down, I was filled completely with dread. The kind where you want to run and scream in no particular direction. Before I could articulate the thought, the sound of a docking boat rose up, and with a nod and a few more last-minute instructions about filling out the logbook, he was gone.
Next boat's at 3 a.m.
He shouted from across the lawn, which seemed like a pretty important detail to be leaving for the last second. Ahead of him were the 2 interns I'd met, Bernard and Terry, along with 2 others. Terry waved and I waved back, pretending to be unfazed. On the boat already, aside from the old man operating it, was a man whose face I couldn't make out from a distance, other than a beard. I assumed it was Dr. Christiansen, though I had no way of knowing for sure. After the boat chugged away and made a line for land, I looked around at the dimming island, inhabited by me and 50 rotting corpses, give or take, with the wind kicking up off the ocean. I wondered how I'd ended up that way. Just a month earlier, I'd been sitting comfortably behind a desk in a warm bank. It was incredible how quickly life could shift beneath your feet. I retreated back inside the guard's office, and immediately decided to stay in it until the boat came to get me at 3. I locked the door. Screw the promises. Screw the temp agency. Screw the Twain Island Forensic Anthropology Facility. I was not about to go stumbling around in the dark on an island full of dead people. Caged or otherwise. There was no way anyone would know one way or the other whether I'd done my rounds or not. And I had a hard time believing that anyone would want to get onto the island, let alone be able to pull up to the dock and get past me without being heard. To pass the time, I had the internet, thankfully, and that got me past the first few mindless hours. Before I knew it, the clock over the door read 9:20. Outside, it was pitch black. Well, inside it was way too quiet. So, I pulled up some music videos and let them play in the background. A huge playlist of classic rock songs, as I opened the text file and thought of some story ideas I'd like to explore. Not surprisingly, most of them had to do with zombies coming to life and attacking the living. Nothing really stuck, though, and I began to have that familiar uneasy feeling that comes whenever I try to write alone. After a few minutes, I stopped trying to fight it. I closed the file, and then, my eyes. I'm not sure how long I was asleep. What I do know is what woke me up. With my eyes still closed, I started to become aware of a sound under the music. The playlist still coming out of the computer's speaker, which was faint, but getting louder. It was far off in the island, but I could make it out as clear as anything. And I know it sounds crazy. I really know it does. But it was a woman crying. When I realized this, my eyes shot open. I jumped out of the chair, grabbing my walkie-talkie and flashlight, and ran out of the office, turning on the flashlight as I came around the building. I stopped for a second and shone the light into the forest, catching nothing but the trunks and leaves. For a second, I wondered if I'd actually heard the cries, or if I'd been half in a dream. The way light sleep messes with you. But then, I heard a shout. Definitely a woman's pitch, and I bolted into the woods. All I could think was some idiot had found their way onto the island, maybe even a group of idiots, thrill-seeking kids, and hurt themselves on my watch. I would have to carefully forge the logbook to cover my arse on this one. That already familiar stench came to my nose as I came into the first clearing. My flashlight picked up the metal of the cages. I stopped running. I remembered myself, where I was, and why I had locked myself in the office. Those cages, just sitting there in the dark. Corpses staring up, maggots and flies. The cries had stopped, which had me thinking either I was being pranked, or much worse, I was too late to help whoever it had been. I did what I swore I wouldn't, which was the job they'd hired me to do. With a major amount of hesitation, I did my rounds. Either I would find the woman, I figured, or I could honestly tell the doctor that I'd secured the island when they found a body in the morning. Another body, that is. A new one. As I walked the edge of the island, I formed a joke in my head about how they could leave the dead woman where they found her and just add her to the guest list. The joke always ended with me saying, "You're welcome." I'll be honest, I didn't do a full perimeter, but I did do most of one. Other than half of a hollowed-out horseshoe crab, I didn't find anything. So, I cut back towards the first clearing where I'd sworn the woman's cries had come from. I walked slowly, in case I came across any more body sites, especially the uncaged kind, which I didn't want to stumble over in the dark, despite the little yellow flags that marked them. The smell would probably warn me first, except for the really long-gone ones. The piles of bones, which still stunk, but not nearly as much. Needless to say, I was relieved when I reached the clearing. The beam of my flashlight caught the top of the cages as I walked between them, using them as a guide back to the office without really focusing on them. For some reason, I still don't understand. Maybe because my eyes picked up something different in the dark, or maybe I felt a change in the air. I shone a light into the last cage. The first I'd seen a few hours earlier, where the bloated woman had grinned up at me. My feet stopped. So did my heart. What my flashlight saw, what I saw, changed me forever. And I know it sounds crazy, I really know it does. But the cage was empty. I got in closer to take a better look, because there was no way what I was seeing was real, but I was horrified to find it was. The body was gone. The only thing left of it was a long patch of dead grass, a puddle of half-dried fluids, and strips of what looked like leather, but I knew wasn't leather. The cage around it was left exactly where I'd seen it, only the body had disappeared. As I stared down at the empty cage, my walkie-talkie crackled in my pocket. It made me jump a bit, the sudden noise in the night, and I fished it out of my pocket where I'd forgotten I put it during the perimeter sweep. But if the first sound made me jump, the second made my skin crawl worse than one of the corpses behind me. A woman was whispering on the other end. I turned the volume up and pressed the speaker to my ear to hear better. The words were too low to make out, only the distinctly female tone, the same as the one who had called out from somewhere in the woods. Nervous, I brought the walkie-talkie to my mouth and pressed the button on the side. "Hello, who's there?" I tried to sound like I was in charge, but it wasn't convincing. I let go of the button and brought the speaker back to my ear, straining to hear the whispers. A laugh. A woman's laugh. High-pitched and delirious came through the speaker. Instinct took over and I ran. I ran away from the cages and out of the clearing, into the woods and out of them again until I was running between the two buildings and back into the office, slamming the door shut and locked it. My pulse throbbed in my neck, and I tried to catch myself with my hands on the desk, taking great, big breaths of air in. Breaths of air. Stale air. Not just stale, but wretched. Sickly sweet and pungent. The smell of those bodies had somehow moved into the guard's office, even though none of the sights were anywhere near it, even with a strong wind to push the air around the island. It was then, as I pushed myself up off the desk, that I thought again of the missing body. The woman's body. The woman's voice on the radio, the whispers and the laugh. It was then that I realized not just the air had gotten into the building. I looked at my hand. A smudge of something black was on my palm. There was a matching one on the table.
Hope you enjoyed this episode and will join us for more.